c'est là où habitent les gens qui ont de l'argent. Et les pauvres, c'est au centre-ville. So, it's very complicated. Yes, in England, we talk about... Alors, puisque je n'ai pas de micro, j'ai besoin de davantage de collaboration de votre part, sinon je ne vais pas m'en sortir. In England, we often talk about the inner cities. The inner cities, ce sont les quartiers pauvres de centre-ville. Yeah? Whereas in France, we talk about the banlieue défavorisée. Okay, another question about class. What have you inherited money? Did you get money from your mummy and your daddy when they died? Or your grandfather and your grandmother? Do you have stocks and shares, des actions dans les entreprises? And finally, did you go to university? Now, all of these are criteria whose meaning changes. In 1960, if you went to university, wow, you were from a high level of class, because not many people went to university. And as you know, today there are a lot of people from very ordinary families like mine who go to university. Okay, so here are some of the difficulties to decide what is the working class, who is working class, who is middle class, who is upper class or owning class. It's a difficult question. For example, the upper class in Britain in the past was the aristocracy, the Duke of Cumberland, and so on and so forth. And their money came from the land. Yeah, they owned a lot of land. Even today, the Queen owns a lot of land, thousands and thousands of square kilometres of land in Britain. And remember, land in Britain is very expensive because Britain is smaller than France. The working class has two sections which are not so different anymore. In the past, we talked about... Non, quand j'ai un micro, et c'est pas grave s'il y a quelques personnes qui parlent, personne ne parle, et quand j'ai pas de micro, les gens se mettent à parler, je les étrangler. Okay, the working class is made up of blue-collar workers, manual workers, and white-collar workers, people who work in offices and so on. But this difference is much smaller today than in the past. In the past, if you worked in a factory or a mine, it was dirty, it was dangerous. And if you worked in an office, well, it was hard work, but it was clean. But modern factories today are much less dangerous. If you work in a factory today, sometimes it's necessary to go to university first because it's complicated machinery and software. Final point here. There are many competing definitions for the middle class. Sometimes I think it doesn't have much meaning, middle class. They're in the middle. So what? They're in the middle. But very often we call people middle class because they have quite a lot of money, because they control at work. In particular, they control other people's work. So, for example, I'm a university teacher, I control my work, but I don't control anybody else's work. But if I am an important manager, I control the work of 50 or 100 people, and I say, okay, you're sacked and you're hired. Yes, I have power at work. And finally, of course, wealth and inheritance, which is one criteria. So, general conclusion on the definition of class, there is no general agreement. Yeah, sociologists and experts do not agree. But nevertheless, there are big inequalities in Britain between the different classes. And here I have a list of the 10 or the 9 richest people in Britain. Alors les demoiselles, si vous voulez un mari, il y en a dedans qu'il faut chercher. The 10 richest people in Britain. Ils ont tendance à être vieux et moches, mais bon, hein, des milliardaires, on s'en fout, non? Okay. The These are numbers which come from 2 years ago. The richest man in Britain owned 10,800 million pounds. Okay? That's okay. And his name, Lakshmi Mittal. I don't know where his name comes from. And he made his money in steel. La Syrie. Comme quoi l'industrie, c'est pas fini en Angleterre. Hein? L'homme le plus riche d'Angleterre a fait son argent dans l'acier. Hein? Dans l'acier, dans une étoile. En achetant des aciéries et en fabriquant de l'acier. Number two, 7,000 million. Ruben Abramovich. He got his money from oil, pétrole. Yeah. Number three, Gerald Grosvenor, the Duke of Westminster. Donc vous voyez que l'aristocratie y est encore un peu dans les plus riches. He got his money in property, dans l'immobilier. Non mais, faut pas que vous parliez en même temps, je vais pas m'en sortir. Déjà, ça fait 4 heures que je parle aujourd'hui. Number four, 5,000 million pounds, Ernesto and Kirsty Bettarelli. OK? Vous voyez, les immigrés peuvent faire de l'argent en Angleterre. OK? Pharmaceuticals, la pharmacie. Des médicaments. Number five, 4,000 million pounds for Hans Rausing, who made his money in food packaging. L'emballage des aliments. C'est pas très intéressant pour faire la conversation, l'emballage des aliments, mais ça peut faire de l'argent. Sir Philip Green and Lady Green, so aristocrats again, aristocrats in number six, who made their money in retailing, dans la grande distribution, supermarché, etc. Then Charlene Cavallo, and they made their money in banking and also in beer, Heineken. And finally, 2,500 million. Oh, bon, c'est rien, 2,500 million. David and Simon Rubin, who made their money in property, immobilier, à nouveau. Okay, so these are... these are the richest people in Britain. Now let's, if we go back... silence. If we go back into the past, we can see... excuse-moi, monsieur, je nomme. If we go back to the past, the aristocracy was much more important in the past, especially before the Industrial Revolution. The aristocracy held the power, and they owned large land estates with the title Lord or Lady, especially Lord and Dukes and Knights and so on, and they had a very large political influence. Here you have the House of Lords, la Chambre des Lords, because for a very long period of time in Britain, we had, like you have in France, two houses in the Parliament, the House of Commons, la Chambre des Communes, and the House of Lords, la Chambre des Lords. So until the 1950s, one of the Houses of Parliament was completely controlled by the aristocracy. This is incredible. This is not very democratic. On se plaint en France du Sénat, mais au moins ils sont élus par quelqu'un. In this case, the aristocracy had the upper house of the Parliament all to themselves. Mais vraiment, si vous voulez pas écouter, vous pouvez partir, il n'y a pas de problème, hein. C'est pas obligatoire. Hein. Mais je ne peux pas bosser sans micro si vous parlez. Ok, things have changed very much. The House of Lords today is not controlled by the aristocracy at all. And I will explain to you the history. So the situation today in England is rather confusing Because you hear House of Lords, la chambre des lords, la bosse droite des aristos, la chambre des lords. Not today, it's finished. There are no aristocrats in the traditional sense in the House of Lords. Nowadays, the aristocracy no longer have direct political power. So what happened? Well, in 1911, and again in 1958, the power of the aristocracy in the House of Lords was reduced. And finally, in 1999, they decided that everybody in the House of Lords is a lord because they were named, they were created lord by the Prime Minister. C'est un petit, aujourd'hui, c'est un petit peu comme à la place du Sénat, vous aviez que des gens qui ont reçu la Légion d'honneur en France. C'est un peu la même situation. This is very different. Remember the traditional House of Lords. I am a lord because my father was a lord. And my son is a lord because I am a lord. Today, if you are a lord in England, it means you have received the title from the Prime Minister, like the Légion d'honneur a little bit, and your son will not be a lord. It is not hereditary. So the hereditary principle in the House of Lords is finished. And of course, this is very important because although, comme je dis, si on remplissait le Sénat au lieu d'élus avec les gens de la Légion d'honneur, c'est pas aussi démocratique que les élire, mais ils sont quand même nommés par un président élu, donc c'est un peu plus démocratique que l'aristocratie. Okay, so that's the situation today. However, as you saw, in England today, the rich people are not all aristocrats. In fact, the aristocrats are a minority. But today, the richest 1% of the population own about a quarter of the wealth of the country. 1% de la population qui possède 25% de toutes les richesses. Mais en 1914, le 1% le plus riche avait deux tiers des richesses. Hein? So, the situation is more equal today than before. Reste du chemin. But nevertheless, it has changed. Okay. Who are these people? Si vous n'arrivez pas à tout écrire, ça ne devrait pas être grave. D'ailleurs, sur le blog, vous trouvez le lien pour revoir. Who are these people? The owning class. The people who control society, a lot of them are senior company directors, the PDG. They work in finance or in politics, mostly in the Conservative Party. Yeah, if you're a very rich businessman and you decide to work in politics, you probably join the Conservative Party. In justice, diplomacy, and among our army officers, ils avaient fait une étude tout récemment sur les juges de la haute cour en Angleterre. Et c'était 9 sur 10 qui étaient passés à Oxford ou à Cambridge. Very, very high, yeah? Of course, the royal family is still important. First of all, they're very rich. And they are the symbol of the rich people in Britain. Now, the royal family is a complicated question. Even the royal family are obliged to be a little bit more democratic today. For example, for many, 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 many years, the Queen did not pay tax. And today, for 10 years ago, they decided the Queen must pay tax. Il y a 10 ans, la reine a accepté qu'elle doit aussi payer l'impôt sur le revenu. This is because the old idea that the Queen is the Queen is more difficult today. Now, very often the sons and daughters, especially the sons of the upper classes, attend the expensive, prestigious public schools, which are private. So, little bit of vocabulary. In Britain, when we talk about public schools, ça veut dire les collèges privés les plus prestigieux. Alors, pourquoi ils s'appellent publics s'ils sont privés? Very simple. Ils l'ont nommé comme ça il y a 4 siècles, des écoles publiques, c'est-à-dire qu'ils étaient ouverts à tous les fils de riches, et pas seulement aux prêtres. Okay. That's why it's called public schools. So, notice that public school, c'est pas la même chose que école privée en général, mais deux écoles privées très chères. I will explain next week about public school, private schools in Britain. Private schools in Britain are extremely expensive. Yeah? Or £20,000, £30,000 a year. It's not like in France. In France, sometimes you can go to a private school and it's not very expensive. Okay. So let's see. Oh, yeah. And again, the owning class, they like to send their children to Oxford or Cambridge. And the favourite hobbies of the rich, fox hunting, polo, horse racing, and so on. However, fox hunting was banned in 2004. Fox hunting, donc la chasse à cour, avec les chiens contre les renards. Du sang partout. Okay. No, I wouldn't like that, I don't think. Oh, here we have the pictures. There's the fox hunting. Yes, and it is very ritualized. You have to wear the special clothes and have the special dogs. And it's a very important ritual for upper class people. And over here we have over here. It's very difficult to do actually. Here we have Prince Charles, and he is playing the game of polo. Yeah? You have to be on the horse and hit the ball. And it looks very dangerous and difficult. I have never played polo, but in general, polo is only for the upper class. Here we have the Royal Ascot races. It's every year they race horses here, and it is extremely posh. Extremely posh, and there are there's a special section for the upper class, and the rules for what you must wear are very strict. Look at the hats and the coat. The coats, pas n'importe quel costume, il faut que ce soit comme ça. Attention. And the women must wear a fancy hat. You must wear a hat. Okay. And there is the Queen at the Royal Ascot races, and there are some gentlemen with the grey, light grey top hats. Et tout un sens le. Le chapeau de forme noire, c'est pour certains, et gris clair, c'est pour d'autres. Si vous vous trompez, c'est gravissime. You understand these social rituals are very, very important. So let's have a look at the working class in Britain. Now, a long time ago, we used to think that the working class were people who worked with their hands. So traditionally, the working class was defined by the fact that its members had manual jobs. However, today, the working class has changed. The number of people working in industry today is about 3 million people working in industry. 11% of the working population, notez bien la traduction, working population, population active. Faut pas dire active population, ça veut dire ceux qui savent marcher. Okay, no, it's a working population. So industry is not so important. But, of course, today the working class is different. If you work on the telephone for a telephone company or a computer company in a call centre, and you must solve one problem every 52 seconds, and your boss is listening to you. Ah, bonjour, je vous appelle parce que je vais vous vendre un truc que vous voulez pas. Yeah? That these many, many people work in these things, and this is really very repetitive work, not very well paid. This is the new working class. In the same way, if you work in a supermarket, yes? Yeah. Beep, 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 beep. It's very similar to the old-fashioned work in a factory. And the number of people working in supermarkets has gone up very, very quickly. Because, of course, 30 years ago, there were a lot of small shops, a butcher, a baker, a greengrocer's, lots of small shops to buy everything. And today, you go to buy most things in a department store or in a supermarket. And so the number of people in supermarkets is very, very high. Especially in Britain, where it is very common today to find supermarkets which are open 24 hours. Dans ma ville natale en Angleterre, qui est un tout petit trou, il y a un supermarché ouvert 24, 23 sur 24, et c'est pas la capitale, c'est tout petit ville de 10 000 habitants. That's very common in Britain. 24 hours supermarkets. Oh, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. I think I'll go and buy some cornflakes. Why not? Okay. Yes, ça c'est ce que je viens de dire. Hein? Nowadays, the working class also includes many office workers, shop workers, workers in transport, as well as a large number of people working in the services, in supermarkets, in hotels, in catering, in hospitals, for town councils, pour les municipalités, the town councils, etc. Attention, un autre point de vocabulaire américain, différence en américain entre le mot city et en britannique le mot city. In Britain, a city is very big. Lille is a city. Marseille is a city. Because it must be very big, otherwise it's a town. In America, city is not so big, not necessarily. Okay, be careful. Final point, today, the majority of the working class are women. Donc, notre image traditionnelle des ouvriers comme des hommes, tous des hommes sales et un peu machos, c'est fini. The majority of the working class in Britain are women today. Supermarkets, nurses, etc. Just a little look at the situation of social services and poverty. I am simplifying, but the situation in general for social services and poverty were that the situation got much better in 1948. After the Second World War, there were very big social reforms. For example, going to a doctor or a hospital is free in Britain and has been since 1948. Donc, personne n'a une mutuelle, il n'y a pas besoin, c'est gratuit. Hein? So this is, pour une fois que les Anglais ont un truc mieux que les Français, je veux le souligner. Okay, so going to a doctor or a hospital, it is free. C'est très difficile en tant qu'Anglais. Quand je suis venu en France et aller chez le médecin avec un chéquier, pour les Anglais, c'est sale, c'est comme la corruption. Quoi. On a beaucoup de mal. Bon, je me suis habitué après 20 ans. Yeah. They are paid by the government. The doctors are paid. The doctors are paid by the government. Absolutely, yeah. Il faut se rappeler qu'après la Deuxième Guerre mondiale, le peuple anglais se vivait comme victorieux, et alors ils avaient des revendications très fortes. And so they got that. Okay, now, in the 1980s and the 1990s, the Conservative governments made a lot of cuts in social budgets, education, housing and health, and social benefits, unemployment benefit, time benefit. Point de vocabulaire, benefits, c'est pas les bénéfices, ce sont les allocations. C'est un faux ami, oui, oui, pas du tout des bénéfices, des allocations. So, unemployment benefits, allocation chômage, child benefits, allocation familiale, sick benefits, allocation de maladie, de congé maladie, etc. Benefits, yeah. C'est un faux ami, c'est pas benefits, c'est pas bénéfice. Now, 10 years ago, for a short while, unemployment was very low, and the economy was in a good shape, and the result was the government spent a lot more money on health and education. But today, the situation is not so wonderful. First of all, there is more poverty in Britain than in France or in Germany. European statistics say a fifth of the British, 20% of the British, and a quarter of the children live below the poverty line. Donc un quart des enfants vivent dans la pauvreté. Maintenant, ce n'est pas la pauvreté comme dans les années 30 où ils n'ont rien à manger. Mais c'est la pauvreté où on ne va jamais en vacances, si la machine à laver tombe en panne, il faut attendre 2 ans pour la remplacer, etc. Okay, so poverty is still widespread. 3 million children live in poverty. Those are figures from 2009. And at the bottom, la dernière statistique qui est bien dans l'actualité, à part avec le mouvement retraite, 30% des retraités en Angleterre vivent dans la pauvreté comparé à 13% en France. Yeah? 30% of pensioners, les retraités, 30% of pensioners in Britain are poor, compared with 13% in France. J'ai oublié de mettre ça, c'est les chiffres de 2010. Okay. So, that's... je ne vais pas vous dire ce qu'il faut faire. Okay, just a couple of pictures. This is a young gentleman. Not so long. He is selling a newspaper. The newspaper is called The Big Issue. And this is a similar system. You sometimes see these in France as well, where people who have nowhere to live, they sell a newspaper and they make some money in this way, a little bit of money. And in Britain, very successful, The Big Issue, very successful. It sells millions of papers. Here is one of the guys who is selling it. And you can see he has a badge to say, I am an official Big Issue seller. Je ne suis pas quelqu'un qui a volé les journaux pour les revendre. Je suis official. Okay? Let's have a little look at the middle class. But again, it's not very easy to define the middle class. Nowadays, we often use the term middle class, not very scientifically, to include the members of the professions, doctors, university lecturers. As you know, university lecturers are very important people. Clerical workers, etc. It is so diversified that many of the members of the lower middle class, for example, nurses or clerks, are very close to the working class, whereas some members of the upper middle class, for example, a successful banker, are very close to the upper class. So really, the middle class is not a very good category because they are not all the same. You have a shopkeeper, a university lecturer, a teacher. They're not in the same situation, really. There are many books about this question. I am simplifying the question a little bit. There are, of course, very big inequalities in right, yeah, there are of course major inequalities of income and wealth. Britain is a very unequal country. For example, if you work in an unskilled or semi-skilled occupation, for example, if you work in an unskilled or a semi-skilled occupation, the sickness rate is 3 times as high as among the professions. Let me explain. An unskilled occupation means you don't need to go to university, you don't need to go to college. For example, if you carry bricks on a building site, that's unskilled. You can learn the job in one day. That's an unskilled occupation. Semi-skilled is, it's not so easy. For example, a taxi driver. You need to learn to drive a taxi. But you don't need to go to university. So this is a semi-skilled occupation. And today, people who have unskilled or semi-skilled occupations are much more frequently ill than people in the professions. Donc le sickness rate, le taux de maladie. Si on travaille dans la construction, ou d'ailleurs, conducteur de bus, c'est nul pour la santé. Hein. C'est absolument affreux pour la santé, pour le dos et tout ça. Camionneur, yeah. Very, very bad for your health. Yeah? Don't be a lorry driver. Okay, good. Yes. Okay. Même que c'est un peu mieux qu'avant, parce que avec une certaine pression syndicale, maintenant les camions, on ne laisse pas n'importe quoi pour travailler avec. Ok. Life expectancy. Oh, il y avait 10 minutes où personne ne disait rien, c'était beau. Ok. Life expectancy, donc en français, espérance de vie. Il y a beaucoup de vocabulaire ici dedans. Hein. Espérance de vie. Et c'est juste le genre de choses que je mettrai dans les contrôles. Hein. Si j'explique hein, du vocabulaire, surtout si je l'explique en français, c'est sûr que je vais le mettre dans le contrôle. Life expectancy is much longer if you are middle class than if you are working class. This is not true for everybody, but in general, when you meet people, when I meet people in England and I say, how old is your mother? And they say, oh, she is 90 and she is in good health. I say, ah, you are a teacher or a doctor or a lawyer. Yeah? If your parents are factory workers, they usually do not live to be 90. Yeah. My father was a factory worker. When he died, he was 67. It's not very old to die from hard work. Also, the other big difference, access to education. That today, the number of working class children going to university is very low and falling. Les enfants d'ouvriers vont moins à la fac aujourd'hui en Angleterre qu'il y a 20 ans. I will explain why next week, because it's very expensive to go to university in Britain. How much do you have to pay here to go to university? Les droits d'inscription, c'est combien? Right, okay. In a normal university in Britain, it is 4,000 euros. Yeah, 4,000. Yeah, c'est plus sérieux comme taux. Okay. Here we have some housing. Du logement. At the top, you have a picture of a block of flats built in the 1950s or the 1960s, working class housing. Although I ought to remind you that in Britain, the block of flats is not so common as in France. En France, il y a beaucoup plus d'immeubles qu'en Angleterre. En Angleterre, beaucoup plus de maisons, même des petites maisons, hein, qu'en France. And here is an example of the... Yes, here is an example. Je vais arrêter. The small houses, les petites maisons anglaises pour les pauvres... C'est un peu comme ça. Comment est-ce que vous voyez que c'est les pauvres? Non, c'est, oui, les poubelles, mais aussi les satellites. Hein. C'est le quartier immigré, satellite, pour avoir la télé de chez eux. OK, houses one next to the other. And here, you have in the corner, you have a poster of a campaign to defend council housing. Now, council housing is the equivalent in Britain of the HLM, donc littéralement logement municipal, parce que les HLM en Angleterre c'est organisé par la municipalité. So council housing, ce sont les HLM en français, donc habitation à loyer modéré. Okay. And this is a campaign to against the privatization of council housing, donc contre la privatisation des logements municipaux. This is a long struggle. To just give you an idea, ALMO, je ne vais pas vous expliquer, c'est un acronyme, c'est ALMO, et bon, c'est trop compliqué. But that is a campaign to defend council housing. Here we have some housing from, these are teachers or successful secretaries or a little bit higher up. And you can see they have at the top, this is what we call semi-detached housing. Littéralement semi-détaché, ça veut dire qu'il y a deux maisons, puis un espace, puis deux maisons, puis un espace. Ne me demandez pas comment ça se dit en français, même les Français ne sont pas d'accord. Okay, yeah, so this is semi-detached housing. Notice they have a little garden behind. The garden is very important for English people. Even a little garden is very, very important. In France, people like to have a garden, but in the Paris region, it's difficult to have a garden, isn't it? It's very difficult. You need money. Yeah, there you go. You can. Vous voyez avec ces maisons là, vous voyez qu'ils ont monté un petit peu dans la société parce que en fait chaque maison a une petite pièce supplémentaire qui a été collée derrière. C'est-à-dire que c'est une cuisine. C'est la cuisine. C'est-à-dire qu'il y avait cuisine salon avant et puis les gens ils ont rajouté une cuisine derrière. And down here again, a little richer again. Look, they have a very very small garden in front of the house. Which really is just so that people cannot see in your window. Okay, so almost middle class housing there. And this is, yes, if you're a lawyer or a company director, you might want to have a detached house like this. Yes? And if you are, of course, if you are a very successful lorry driver, if you are a millionaire, this is what you can have. Housing for millionaires in Britain. C'est plutôt moche, mais c'est grand. Okay. Now, finally, of course, the different sections of society are organized to defend their interests. And here we have some of the important organizations. At the top here you have the CBI, the Confederation of British Industry. And this is the organization of the bosses, of the owners of companies. They are in the CBI. What is the organization in France for the owners of companies and businessmen? The MEDEF, yeah. This is the British equivalent of the MEDEF. The MEDEF, yeah. Avant c'était le CNPF. Yeah, I'm not saying the MEDEF. The Confederation of British Industry. And the woman there is the president, the first woman president of the CBI. In the past, of course, it was always a man. And on the other side of the slide, you can see a second organization, the Federation of Small Businesses. Fédération des Petites Entreprises. The Federation of Small Businesses. C'est difficile parce qu'en français, vous avez cette expression un peu étrange, PME, petite ou moyenne entreprise. Et en Angleterre, on a small business, ou big business, mais on n'a pas medium-sized business. No, we don't have that. Okay, so the Federation of Small Business. Now, even today, there are a lot of small businesses in Britain. There are... Okay. Yeah, there are a lot of small businesses in Britain even today, and the Federation of Small Businesses has, I think, 215,000 members. Yeah, 215,000 members. Il y a 215,000 membres. Vous notez en passant qu'il y a un virgule après 215. En anglais, 215,000, ça s'écrit avec une virgule. Ce n'est pas 215 membres. C'est pas beaucoup, hein. 215,000 membres, the Federation of Small Businesses. This could be surprising because the number of small businesses is going down very quickly. In the past, if you were a butcher, you had a small business. If you were an ironmonger, you had a small business. Ironmonger, quincaillerie. If you were a cobbler, un cordonnier, you had a small business or a haberdasher. But today, we go to general shops. We all go to Monoprix or Marks and Spencers in Britain. Nevertheless, there are still 215,000 members. And of course, the workers are organised in trade unions. This graph shows you the percentage of British workers in trade unions. In 1900, 10% of British workers were in trade unions. In 1920, 40% of British workers were in trade unions. Donc il s'agit bien sûr des syndicats, trade unions. In the 1950s, it remained stable at 40%, and the highest point is more than 50% in the 1970s. After the 1970s, there was a rapid decline. And today, in 2000, it was 30%. And today, in 2010, it gone up a little bit, 32% today. Okay, so you can see that it has been a difficult time over the last 30 years. However, you need to remember that in France, the percentage is 8%. In Britain, 30% of workers are in trade unions, and in France, 8%. Now, the reasons are a little complicated, but fundamentally, In France, if you all work in a company and I'm the boss, and there are 100 people here and only 8 of you are in a trade union, nevertheless, in France, you must have a délégué du personnel, a comité d'entreprise. Whereas in Britain, if you don't have a trade union, you have nothing. There is no délégué du personnel, there is no comité d'entreprise. And so the result is people join trade unions because if not, you have no representation at all. And this is the reason why 30% is a respectable figure in European countries. Between 1945 and 1979, the governments negotiated frequently with trade unions. The economy was in good shape. It was easy for companies to make profit. And so the government was happy to talk to the trade unions. After, in the 1970s, very big waves of strikes, enormous waves of strikes. And in 1974 and in 1978 in particular. Oui, là, en fait, c'est, il est pas dans le bon endroit là. Mais c'est le nombre de syndiqués de 75 à 2005. OK? Il y avait jusqu'à 12 millions et aujourd'hui, il y a 7 millions. Now, in the 1980s, 1979 to 1997, the Conservative governments were difficult times for trade unions. Since 1979, anti-union laws make it harder to strike. For example, solidarity strikes are illegal. Political strikes are illegal in Britain. Les grèves contre le projet de retraite, ce sera illégal en Angleterre. Bon, ça c'est un peu compliqué parce que quand on a un gouvernement et on dit que ça, quelque chose est illégal et ils sont 2 millions à le faire, on ne peut pas grand chose. Hein. Mais bon, ce serait illégal. Throughout the 1980s, union membership declined rapidly due to a combination of government hostility towards the unions and deindustrialization. In 1984, there was a big miners' strike for 1 year, 12 months. The miners were on strike for 12 months.
Très, très difficile. Ils n'avaient pas de quoi bouffer.
And the government was successful. The aim of the government was to destroy the miners' union because the miners were the strongest union. The government was successful, and for 20 years, all the trade unions were demoralized. Yeah. The miners were the strongest. Yeah, the strongest, the biggest. The most solid trade union, and they were defeated after 1 year in a strike, and the result was massive demoralization in the trade unions. But today, after 1995, there is a slow recovery. From 1997 to 2009, we had Labour governments, and the Labour government made some changes to make life easier for trade unions. For example, if you want to have a union, you can have a referendum in your company. And if 40% of the employees in a firm vote in favour, then the employer must negotiate with the union.
Autre question de vocabulaire. Employee, c'est les salariés. C'est pas que les employés. Les ouvriers sont des employés et les cadres sont des employés. C'est les salariés en général. Okay.
Second important reform by the Labour government, a minimum wage was introduced for the first time. The very first time in British history to have a minimum wage, le SMIC, en 98 ou 99, in England. But the Labour government did not change the anti-union laws which came before. Ils n'ont pas abrogé les lois antisyndicales qui existaient. They have encouraged the idea of labour flexibility, davantage de travail de nuit, etc. And they were not very happy to be too close to the trade unions. Which brings us to today. Je ne sais pas si vous avez remarqué, mais il y a un nouveau gouvernement en Angleterre depuis quelques mois. Une alliance entre les conservateurs et les libéraux.
and the new Conservative Liberal Coalition set up in 2010 under David Cameron is planning new laws. Il les a pas encore votés, mais il projette des nouvelles lois to make life harder for trade unions and to make it harder to strike legally. Je vous donne pas tous les détails, c'est technique, mais pour rendre plus difficile une grève légale. Okay, so that's the situation of trade unions. There are strikes in Britain. This week there is a strike in the Underground in London. There is also a strike next month for the fire brigade, les pompiers. But you do not see in Britain, in the last 10 or 15 years, you have never seen strikes like in France today. Yeah, the English are, my English friends, they phone me and say, wow, those strikes are amazing, how do you do it? I said, well, it wasn't, je n'ai pas tout seul, c'est pas moi. Ou sinon je n'ai pas, écoutez, vous savez, quand on est doué, on est doué. Okay, thank you very much for listening. N'oubliez pas que vous pouvez retrouver les diapos en partant du blog.
Dites-moi un instant, je vais arrêter ça.